Starting now, it is time for us to wake. We who stumble through the day with our gripes and complaints, who drift numbly through thronging halls and streets, you and I, who rant about injustice, who see all that is wrong in this world and believe that we are shackled and powerless. It is time to look into each other's faces. We who glide along the surface, time to dive down and feel the currents of each other's lives. Time to speak until the air holds all of our voices. Time to weave for each other a garment of brightness. Open your eyes. Feel your strength. Bless the past. Greet the future. Join hands right here. Our moment. Starting now.
Good morning. Welcome to the West Hills Unitarian Universalist Fellowship, affectionately known as WUF. My name is Kim Transier. My pronouns are she and her, and it is my privilege to be your lay leader this morning. You are welcome here. No matter how you look, how you speak, or whom you love, whether you come with joy or a broken heart, you are welcome here.
I am the Reverend Tracy Springberry, and it is my delight to serve this warm, welcoming, creative congregation. I use the pronouns she and her. For the last 2 weeks, we were able to meet virtually in our beloved sanctuary at WUF. But this week, the governor of Oregon asked us to stay home. So we are staying home, bringing you our words and music from diverse places across our region and weaving them together. This process reminds us that we can weave community and meaning in challenging circumstances. We are not alone as we live and make sense of our lives in these challenging times. In one of my favorite readings in our gray hymnal, the Reverend Kathleen McTeague reminds us to rest for a moment on the forming edge of our lives, to resist the headlong tumble into the next moment until we claim for ourselves awareness and gratitude. This is a reason that we come together week in and week out to remember to simply pause for a long moment, without tumbling into the anxiety, grief, and shapelessness, stress, and to-do lists that frame what happens next. In these moments, we can claim awareness and gratitude. This morning, I light this chalice, the symbol of our faith, to remind us to rest for this hour on the forming edges of our lives.
Globe Scope by William Stafford, read with permission from the estate of William Stafford. Grass is our flag. It whispers, Asia, Asia. Dakota, Dakota, prairie, steppe, All over the world, it leans above rivers, Volga, Amazon, Ganges, a grass like wheat, and its friend, the wind, carrying our message everywhere, leaf by leaf. It is a good flag. But sometimes others hover above and all around us, relying on some great Beowulf satellite, infallibly orbited, loaded with warheads, patrolling, lashing a laser, and ready against all enemies. Then, glancing from their high place, those warriors feel pity for us 12 millions, hostages to someone or some policy poised over us. Warriors can't think that way for long. It does no good to tolerate waverers. But grass is our flag, with its little song carrying a breath and a pause and a breath again. A voice in the world like a mother holding her child in its cradle and caring. The song of life that all things utter to the world's people. And many will join. The breath of our lives is a pledge across years to each other. Whatever happens, we are faithful. In that world story where the rivers flow and the wind discovers its great following and the grass whispers.
Good morning. My name is Salima Malton. I've been a member of WWF for over 20 years, and it is such a joy to be sharing this time with you today. Now back in that other world we used to live in, and just a few weeks ago, where we were physically gathered together in the sanctuary on Sunday mornings to find comfort in community and to make sense of the world and what was happening in it. Back in that day, I was planning a much different poetry service than we are going to be experiencing this morning. But fortunately, flexibility is one of my better characteristics, and so here we are, physically distanced, but very much together, still together, always together, in a collective energy field that is momentarily free, that is momentarily free of COVID-19 and its steady stream of dreaded updates. Let's just turn off all those devices right now. And for the next while, just cozy in place. Maybe you're cuddled up in your robe or your jammies with a steaming cup of tea or coffee and a piece of toast and jam by your side. Maybe there's a cat purring in your ear or a dog resting its head on your slippered feet. Thank goodness social distancing does not affect those animals. But if, like me, you don't have a pet, or perhaps you are gluten-free or off sugar, maybe poetry will be your comfort food this morning. But here is the warning. Now, don't get too comfy. For one of these days, eventually, for sure, this time of social distancing will have run its course, and we will again be physically together in the sanctuary. Now, this morning, some of you are here with your children, and I understand that they could get restless and would probably rather be playing in their rooms. So how about we begin with this? During this time of uncertainty and deep concern, It is natural to want to hear only words of inspiration and hope. And indeed, we will hear some of those this morning. But it is also important that we keep in touch with those harsh realities in the world around us. Rumi, the iconic Sufi poet from the 14th century, offers us this bit of advice. This being human, he says, is a guest house. Every morning, a new arrival. Welcome and entertain them all. Even if they are a crowd of sorrows who violently sweep your house empty of its furniture. So I invite you to welcome and entertain all of our poetic visitors this morning, whether they confront us with a crowd of sorrows or bring tidings of comfort and joy. Let's invite them all in. The poet and songwriter Naomi Shihab Nye says this of poetry. As a direct line to human feeling, empathic experience, genuine language and detail, poetry is everything that headline news is not. It takes us inside situations, helps imagine life from more than one perspective, honors imagery and metaphor, those great tools of thought, and deepens our confidence in a meaningful world. That's poetry. It grabs us by the heart. So let's begin by hearing this from Oregon's current poet laureate, Kim Stafford, who, when I emailed him asking for permission to use two of his poems in the service this morning, replied, "I'm glad you are doing this, Suleyma. Poetry has a special job right now. To connect us, to remind us of our hidden powers, open our minds to new ways of thinking, feeling, and acting." Never one to turn away from trouble, this is Hard Talk by Kim Stafford, used with gracious permission from the author. What if understanding is a light we glimpse beyond the thorny thicket of difficult conversation? What if polite gossip won't get us there? And even civil discourse keeps us trapped in our old meadow of safety and ignorance? What if it takes a few bruises and scratches to reach the light? What if you and I need to wade in together, talking recklessly, not silent, not shouting, but fierce in listening, saying, "How is it for you? Tell me more about that. I want to know what I never knew. I need your suffering to erase my denial and my pain to illuminate your path." Ready? We begin. Martin Espada and Wendell Berry are two poets whose fierce love of the earth and its people come through loud and strong in their work. Espada's poem, "Heal the Cracks in the Bells of the World," and Wendell Berry's, "A Poem on Hope," are two examples of the harsh wisdom that poetry speaks, and I planned to share them with you via video of the poets reading their own work. But because there are copyright laws restricting the rebroadcast of online videos, I encourage you to Google and experience these poems from these poets later on, if you wish. Now, I can tell you some of the things that Berry wants us to know about hope. It is hard. It is harder as you grow old, for hope does not depend on feeling good. Because we have not made our lives to fit our places, the forests are ruined, the fields eroded, the streams polluted, the mountains overturned. Hope then to belong to your place by your own knowledge of what it is that no other place is. Be still and listen to the voices that belong to the stream banks and the trees and the open fields. Now, there are women poets, too, whose love is just as fierce and whose wisdom can be just as harsh. And there are some who take a gentler approach, like the late Mary Oliver, who says that when she is among the trees, they give off such hints of gladness. I would almost say that they save me, and daily. The light flows from their branches, and they call again. It is simple. They say, it is simple. And you too have come into the world to do this, to go easy, to be filled with light, and to shine. Such encouragement, such graciousness. Now, Jane Hirschfield is another female poet of great renown and high regard. She is an American Buddhist practitioner with a strong bent for science. And 5 days after the 2016 inauguration of the 45th President of the United States, the day that the new administration removed all government mention of science and climate change, Jane Hirschfield wrote this poem and immediately placed it in the public domain so there would be no hindrance of its circulation. On the Fifth Day, by Jane Hirschfield. On the fifth day, the scientists who studied the rivers were forbidden to speak or to study the rivers. The scientists who studied the air were told not to speak of the air. And the ones who worked for the farmers were silenced, and the ones who worked for the bees. Someone from deep in the Badlands began posting facts. The facts were told not to speak and were taken away. The facts, surprised to be taken, were silent. Now it was only the rivers who spoke of the rivers, and only the wind that spoke of its bees. While the unpausing factual buds of the fruit trees continued to move toward their fruit. The silence spoke loudly of silence, and the rivers kept speaking of rivers, of boulders, and air. In gravity, earless and tongueless, the untested rivers kept speaking. Bus drivers, shelf stockers, code writers, machinists, accountants, lab techs, cellists kept speaking. They spoke the fifth day of silence. And when the enemies are real, and we get to see that the real enemies are real people, who speaks for them? Who recognizes them for the real people that they are? The late William Stafford, the first poet laureate of the United States and Oregon's own for many years, the poet who prefers that grass be our flag, was a lifelong conscientious objector who refused to kill another human being under any circumstances, who refused to not love another human being because of the color of their skin or the way that they prayed or if they prayed. One of my all-time favorites of Stafford's thousands of poems is titled For the Unknown Enemy, and I read it this morning with permission from the estate of William Stafford. It goes like this. This monument is for the unknown good in our enemies. Like a picture, their life began to appear. They gathered at home in the evening and sang. Above their fields, they saw a new sky. A holiday came, and they carried the baby to the park for a party. Sunlight surrounded them. Here we glimpse what our minds long turned away from. The great mutual blindness darkened that sunlight in the park, and the sky that was new, and the holidays. This monument says that one afternoon we stood here letting a part of our minds escape. They came back, but different. Enemy, one day we glimpsed your life. This monument is for you. So much of our global conflict, so much of the conflict right here in our Americas is about borders. It's about who gets to cross them and for what reason. During this time of climate crisis and now pandemic, the numbers of refugees seeking escape from starvation, from persecution, from forms of cruelty that we can't even imagine has multiplied exponentially. Naomi Shihab Nye, who I mentioned earlier, was born to a Palestinian refugee father and an American mother of Swiss and German heritage. She remarks, "You know, for those of us who leave our homes in the morning and expect them to be there when we get back, it's hard for us to understand what the experience of a refugee might be like." Richard Blanco is a Cuban-American poet who offered the inaugural poem at the second inauguration of President Obama. Richard was also last year's Ware Lecturer at the UUA's General Assembly in Spokane, Washington. And his latest poetry collection, titled How to Love a Country, contains the following poem in the voice of the river. It is read now by Steve Brooks.
Complaint of El Rio Grande, for Aylin Barbieri, by Richard Blanco, from How to Love a Country, published by Beacon Press and used with permission. I was meant for all things to meet, to make the clouds pause in the mirror of my waters, to be home to fallen rain that finds its way to me, to turn eons of loveless rock into lovesick pebbles, and carry them as humble gifts back to the sea, which brings life back to me. I felt the sun flare, praised each star, flocked about the moon long before you did. I've breathed air you'll never breathe, listened to songbirds before you could speak their names, before you dug your oars in me, before you created the gods that created you. Then countries, your invention, maps jigsawing the world into colored shapes, caged in bold lines to say, you're here, not there. You're this, not that. To say, yellow isn't red. Red isn't black. Black is not white. To say mine, not ours. To say war and believe life's worth is relative. You named me Big River, drew me blue, thick to divide, to say spick and Yankee, to say wetback and gringo. You split me in two, half of me us, the rest them. But I wasn't meant to drown children, hear mothers' cries, never meant to be your geography, a line, a border, a murderer. I was meant for all things to meet, the mirrored clouds and sun's tingle, bird songs and the quiet moon, the wind and its dust, the rush of mountain rain, and us. Blood that runs in you is water flowing in me. Both life, the truth we know, be one in one another.
And how can we speak of discrimination, injustice, persecution, without acknowledging those among us whose very beingness is threatened and questioned by ignorance and fear? 2 days from now, on March 31st, we will celebrate Transgender Visibility Day 2020, honoring the contributions to our evolving society by non-binary and transgender people. Kim will share excerpts now from a poem titled A Prayer Beyond Binaries by Linda Susan Ulrich.
For those who bring your whole self to the work of liberation, whether or not it fits conveniently into checkboxes or someone else's definition. For those who relentlessly widen the circle for others, including those who would shut you out. This is a prayer praising your beautiful spirit and your courage. This is a prayer honoring your fierceness and your heartache. This is a prayer giving thanks for language broken open, because the only duality you still hold on to is to love and to love some more. There's a reason the collective noun for bisexuals is blessing. May this day and every day remind you that you are loved beyond all bounds simply because you exist.
Quarantine, 1918, by Faith Sheeran, from her poetry collection, Orpheus Turning, published by Broadkill River Press and read with permission. There were towns that knew about the flu before it arrived. They had time to imagine the germs on a stranger's skirts, to see how death could be sealed in an envelope, how a fever could bloom in the evening and take a life overnight. A few villages deep in the mountains posted guards on their roads, and no one was allowed to come or go, not even a grandmother carrying a cake. No mail was accepted, and all the words and packages families sent to one another went unopened, unanswered. Trains were told not to stop, so they glowed for a moment before swaying towards some other place. The food at the corner store never came from out of town, and no one went to see a distant auntie or state fair. For a while, the outside world existed in imagination, in memory, in books or suitcases, deep in closets. There was nothing but the town itself, hiding from what was possible. And the children, cutting dolls from paper, their scissors sharp.
Here's dialogue with coronavirus. Talking heads say there's a virus killing us. It could be an asteroid, earthquake, hurricane, or a GU-43 BMO airblast bomb. At least corona is organic, with short strands of RNA and DNA in a protein shell. Right now, he or she needs a host shell like ours to grow in. Otherwise, they'll just die away. I wonder if they make us sick and die, wishing they could just shoot us like we shoot each other. I'll check in. Hi, Corona, how are you?
Who, me?
Yes. Why are you talking to me?
Because I want to know what you are.
Haven't you heard enough about me on social media?
Yes, I sure have, but it's all about how bad you are.
Right. What can I say?
Are you that bad?
I don't think so.
How bad are you?
I'm good at what I do. According to microphotos, I'm good looking.
Oh, but you kill people. You know that, don't you?
Yes, that's not all I do, but that's what I'm good at right now.
Why do you kill people?
Well, I didn't have anything else to do, and some guy who loves you humans suggested this is a good time for you to find out you have no control over your life, your world, or each other, and you certainly have no control over your death.
Why should we know that?
Because you have to grow up, get real, give up your materialism, your toys, your gross entertainment. Gather yourself into yourself. Wake yourself up to who you've been, who you are, where you are, and what you have, and if you're worthy of life.
Do you have sense?
Ask your scientist. Maybe she knows. Maybe that's all I have. Now get out of here or I might kill you.
Choice by Lynn Unger. Used with permission of Beacon Press. There isn't a right answer. There just isn't. The game show where the bell rings and the points go up and the confetti falls because you got the answer is a lie. The preacher who would assure you of how to attain salvation is making it all up. The doctor who knows just how to fix what ails you will be sure of something else tomorrow. Every choice will wound someone, heal someone, build a wall, and open a conversation. Things will always happen that you cannot foresee. But you have to choose. It's all we have. That little rudder that we employ in the midst of all the eddies and rapids. The current that pulls us inexorably toward the sea. The fact that you are swept along by the river is no excuse. Watch where you are going. Lean in toward what you love. When in doubt, tell the truth.
Now, as we prepare to conclude our time together, here are two short poems from What the Heart Knows by Joyce Zidman, published by Houghton Mifflin Harcourt, and read with the author's permission and the gentlest of blessings. Blessing on the smell of dog, by Joyce Sitt. May the dog always smell of dog. May his scent seep through perfume shampoos like the rich tang of mud in spring. May the grass cling to his paws, the loam to his belly. May his fur hold the wind's breath. May we forgive him his whiffs of carrion and scat from the treasures he gathers so diligently. As we turn from all that is false, may we praise instead the warm scent buried like a promise in that deep-hearted chest. Den, comfort, home. And blessing on the curl of cat. As cat curls in a circle of sun, sleek and round, snug and warm, a hint of ear cocked in readiness, so may I find my place in this shifting world. Secure within myself, certain of my worth, equally willing to purr or leap.
Our benediction is Meeting Halfway by Kim Stafford, used with the kind permission of the author. Behold this empty space between your certainty and mine, this arena of sunlight free of claim and counterclaim, this bright meadow where no one has shouted, bullied, or begged, where butterflies are sovereigns, where bird song is our legislation, where you and I could walk and speak first of the children, then of our dreams, and only then of the work we will do together. I extinguish this chalice, but not the warmth of inspiration of our faith, nor our commitment to its principles. These will we carry with us until we meet again.